Hello and welcome to the Wednesday, January 4th edition of Juneau Afternoon, coming live at you from the KTOO studios in Alaska's capital city. We've got a great show. We'll be hearing about women playing Hamlet, the Gold Street Music Jamboree, which is this Saturday. Then we'll talk to guest birder Brenda Wright, and we'll end with Eagle Crest. All that and more.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The new governor of North Dakota, Doug Burgum, is calling on people opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline to vacate the main camp due to spring flooding. In his first State of the State address delivered Tuesday, Burgum says the camp sits on the floodplain of the Missouri and Cannonball Rivers and will likely flood in early March due to heavy snow the region has already received this winter. He says the abandoned cars, illegal structures, and human waste have to be cleaned up and will take joint efforts by tribal, county, state, and federal agencies.
Anything less than a complete restoration of the area prior to the early March flood will endanger the lives of the protesters and of our first responders. It will also create an environmental threat to the waters of the Missouri.
Burgum added that while the Standing Rock Sioux tribe has legitimate concerns about the pipeline, including protecting water and a desire for genuine government-to-government consultation, he says that's been hijacked by people with what he calls alternative agendas. The governor says trust has been eroded and has pledged to start a fresh relationship with tribes by starting to meet with tribal leaders this week. In early December, the Standing Rock Sioux tribe asked people to leave the camp due to safety concerns about the harsh winter. People are still occupying the camp, and many have vowed to stay long-term to continue to fight the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's effort to protect water and the environment from the Dakota Access Pipeline has prompted some people in Minnesota to focus on protecting one of their water sources. Melissa Townsend tells us about a group of neighbors in Minneapolis working to protect a nearby lake.
The First Universalist Church is located about 8 blocks from the shore of Bede-Mikaska. And a group of churchgoers and neighbors have been meeting here for about a year to explore their cultural perspectives on the water, its value, and its sacredness. Conversation kept turning toward the Missouri River and Lake Oahe, the water the Standing Rock Tribe is trying to protect from the Dakota Access Pipeline. A number of people in this group visited Standing Rock last fall. John Saxhog is one of them.
I grew up in northern Minnesota, but my career brought me down here.
He says what's happened at Standing Rock has been an awakening for people here.
They have this intellectual feel that, yes, we must keep our water clean. But then to look at what's happening at Standing Rock and seeing that it takes more than your head, I think you also have to feel that. It's in the heart.
John says this group of mostly white people are beginning to feel how sacred water is.
I think people are seeing the spirituality of water and that range of how important water is.
Meeting organizers say they plan to continue these conversations here at the Unitarian Church in Minneapolis. For National Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
The top prosecutor in the Leonard Peltier case is urging President Obama to grant clemency to the imprisoned activist. Former U.S. Attorney James Reynolds made the request in a letter to the president last month. Peltier is serving 2 consecutive life sentences for the murder of 2 FBI agents in the 1970s on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Attorneys and supporters of Peltier believe he has been wrongfully imprisoned and are pushing Obama to grant clemency during his final days in office. Supporters of Peltier say he has spent enough time served, more than 40 years, pointing to his ailing health and to give him the opportunity to reconnect to the Native community. Law enforcement groups maintain he's guilty and should serve out his sentence. Revenue sharing between the Nottawasipi Huron Band of Potawatomi and the state of Michigan includes help for schools to get rid of their Indian mascots. Funds may be awarded to local governments and schools to cover the cost of replacing mascots and logos considered offensive to Native Americans under a new gaming compact announced Tuesday between the tribe and state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea. Thank you, President Obama, for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument, protecting ancestral lands, ensuring our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Learn more at protectbearsears.org. Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions in Albuquerque. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to KTOO, specifically Juno Afternoon. It is Wednesday. I'm your usual Thursday host, but I'm here sitting in on Wednesday. My name is Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. We've got a great one, so stay tuned. But first, let's do the weather. It looks like tonight is mostly cloudy. Areas of freezing fog, lows around 20. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy flurries. Highs around 30 and Thursday night. Through the weekend, it looks like mostly cloudy and cold with a little snow. We'll hear what's going on up at Eagle Crest at the end of the show. We've got some folks coming down from the mountain to give us an update. But let's kick off the show with some arts, which is what Juno Afternoon spends a lot of time talking about. We have two artists, local artists, in the studio with us. They're from the Juno Douglas Little Theater. We have Heather Laverne and Grace Lee. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And they are here to talk about Juno Douglas Little Theater's next production, which is called Women Playing Hamlet. So Heather is directing and Grace is the lead in the show, correct?
Yes.
All right, that sounds great. So let's talk about the play. I've never heard of it.
It's actually brand new. I read it 2 years ago, and I wanted to do it, but I couldn't get the rights because it was in a world premiere. And so I believe that we are the first production company doing it in Alaska. But, yeah, it's a play about a girl who gets cast as the lead in Hamlet, the role of Hamlet. Mm-hmm. And she has kind of an existential crisis trying to figure out her journey on how to play such an iconic role, but it's done very comedically.
So the actress who's playing the king of existential angst is actually having an existential crisis herself. That's great.
Yeah, that's right. I'm having one of those right now, actually.
I bet. So when is the play and where?
We open this Friday, January 6th, at McFeeters Hall at 7 o'clock.
Okay, great. And you run for how many weekends?
We're going to be running for three shows the first weekend and four shows the second. We're going to be doing a Thursday show next weekend as well.
Okay, so it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Sunday at like 2 or 3?
Actually, we're doing 7 o'clock shows all the way through.
Easy
to remember.
Exactly. That sounds great. And you're at McFeeters Hall. Okay. So, Grace, what is your acting odyssey?
Oh, non-existent. This is it. This is the first time I've ever acted or been a part of anything like this. And so it's all very new and exciting for me.
And it's a brand new play.
Brand new play. And
that's freeing, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's always like this.
Yes, but except I'm also playing Hamlet. I'm doing air quotes for people on the air. And so there's a lot of that sort of weight on the role as well.
But it's a comedic turn on it, right?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people, I think the poster especially kind of gives that vibe of the melancholic prince, you know, and the Hamlet vibe. But it isn't Hamlet at all.
Not at all.
There's only a couple moments where we even break out into the Shakespearean dialect, but otherwise it's very modern, and I think people will get quite a kick out of it.
And how many people are in the play?
We have 11 cast members, all women. Every character, male and female, are played by women, and some people have multiple roles, which will be fun to see their versatility.
So is this like a little spoof on how in Shakespearean time all the roles were played by men?
Exactly.
But it is comfortable for the Shakespeare phobic. For the people that I heard,
oh,
that.
Oh, yes. Like, yes.
Can some people hear Shakespeare and they just go, well, and other people hear Shakespeare and they're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's It's written in a way where people who love Shakespeare will get certain elements of it, and you know, it's kind of, they can nerd out over that. But people who don't know anything about Shakespeare, they can enjoy the show as well. There isn't too much of that, so nothing's going to go over anyone's head.
Sounds great. And how has the experience? I'm asking Grace. I'm pointing to her here in the studio for the, with the air quotes and the pointing. So, Grace, how has your first experience been in rehearsal?
It's been amazing. I have a lot of these women that I've been working with. They're brand new. I've never seen them around. But then to be able to work with them in this sort of capacity, we've really grown a pretty solid bond. And I didn't know that acting can get people so close together. But we all, I think, consider ourselves friends. And it's just been really fun. We try to make each other laugh all the time during rehearsals. And that is hilarious. These are some really funny women who are all gathered together. So.
Well, your last production was quite hilarious, too. And that was, what was that production?
Five Lesbians Eating a Quiche. Which
yes, that was over at the Hangar Ballroom.
It was, yeah. And we actually have three actors from that who are in this one as well, which we're really lucky to have them back. So we have a nice dynamic of people who have done it before and people who are new up on stage.
Sounds great. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Juno Afternoon, and we're chatting with ladies from the Juno Douglas Little Theater. They're talking about their new play, which is really new, Women Playing Hamlet. It's a new play. Heather, the director, scooped up the rights as soon as she could. And it starts this Friday at McPheeters Hall.
That's right.
Okay, and where can people get tickets?
You can get them online, thejack.org, or also at Hearthside.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much for coming in. I look forward to seeing the show. And as I say, break a leg. But not really.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's icy out there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's January the 4th, 2017. It's the birthday of the historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, born in Brooklyn, 1943, author of best-selling books on Lincoln, Lyndon B. Johnson, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Grew up a fan of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Her father taught her how to keep score. Wrote a memoir about it, Wait Till Next Year, Summer Afternoons with My Father and Baseball. She met President Johnson when she was 24 years old. She was a White House fellow. He took a liking to her, showed her his papers, and she wrote the book Lyndon Johnson and the American Dream. Her favorite of all her books was No Ordinary Time, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, the Home Front in World War II. It's the birthday of the man who said truth is ever to be found in simplicity and not in the multiplicity and confusion of things. Sir Isaac Newton, born Woolsthorpe, England, 1643, who in 1686 published his Principia, which overturned nearly everything humankind had believed about the universe up to that point. He proved that the celestial bodies were governed by the same laws of physics as objects on Earth. He incorporated Kepler's laws of planetary motion into his own theories about gravity and established the three laws of motion, the first stating that objects at rest tend to remain at rest, objects in motion tend to remain in motion unless they're acted upon by an external force. The second law states that an applied force on an object equals the rate of change of its momentum with time. And the third law states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Isaac Newton said, "I don't know what I may appear to the world, but to myself, I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore, diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me." And it was on this date, 1935, that Bob Hope began his broadcasting career as the host of a show called The Intimate Review. It was sponsored by Bruno Seltzer, was on the NBC network. Bob Hope sang, he danced, he told jokes, but it was a studio show. There was no audience, and it was canceled after 13 weeks. His big success was 3 years later on a show called The Pepsodent Show, which was in front of an audience. He opened the show with a monologue, and his career went on for about 60 years after that. Here's a poem by David Budbill, The Woodcutter Changes His Mind. When I was young, I cut the bigger, older trees for firewood, the ones with heart rot, dead and broken branches, the crippled and deformed ones, because I reasoned they were going to fall soon anyway, and therefore I should give the younger trees more light and room to grow. Now I'm older, and I cut the younger, strong and sturdy, solid and beautiful trees, and I let the older ones have a few more years of light and water and leaf in the forest they have known. So long, soon enough, they will be prostrate on the ground. The Woodcutter Changes His Mind by David Budbill from While We've Still Got Feet, published by Copper Canyon Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Condor Airlines, introducing new service from San Diego, Pittsburgh, and New Orleans. More information on Condor's 12 U.S. gateways available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city and KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your usual Thursday host, but it is Wednesday. And, you know, this Saturday there's going to be a Gold Street Music, a Gold Street Jamboree at the Resurrection Lutheran Church this Saturday, 7:30. And we've got a little jamboree going on right here. We've got Elva Bontrager and Mike Truex here in the studio, and Mike's going to play a song for us.
Okay. I guess I'd like to put an end to a rumor that I've heard. I will not be playing at Trump's inauguration.
Oh.
I would like the public to know that. He started with the A-list. I think he's up for the T's now, so I want him to know that...
You have refused.
Yes.
He told us.
Don't talk to me about the good old days. I can't remember me one. Yeah, our love was more like a nuclear war. Be glad that it's over and done. Now, if you don't recall how my head hit the wall, allow me to show you the scar. The only good years that we had were the tires on our car. Oh, mounds of kisses and fields of love. We never had none of that. We broke our vows a thousand times. Each year was the year of the rat. The comforts and bliss of true happiness we only saw from afar. The only good years that we had were the tires on our car. So how can you say we should try it again? I know that I never will. We didn't have much, but I'll tell you as such, what we did have was bordering hell. Now maybe, perhaps, it's just a memory lapse from too many nights at the bar. But the only good years that we had were the tires on our car. The only good years that we had were the tires on our car.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
Here we are live. We're having a little Gold Street Jamboree preview here in the studio. That was Mike Truex, and he's here with Elva Bontrager. And what is going on? What will be the lineup on Saturday?
Well, we have quite a few people. Although, if someone with a guitar or whatever wants to come that evening, we'll get them in, fit it in.
Excellent.
You'll be glad to hear her or her, them, him, whatever. We've got a lineup of about 15 people, and the idea is that each one will do an abbreviated session, one or two or three songs, and it'll go to the next person. And you can do it as a group or singly or however you wish. It's going to be fun.
Sounds great. So who do you have lined up?
Tom Looker is going to start. He's on the piano. He's a wonderful piano player. He has two singers, Dara Relatos and Taylor Bittick. Taylor lives here in town.
Oh.
Dara is back in town. And these two have wonderful voices.
Mm-hmm.
So you've heard them before. And we have Riley Woodford is going to MC, and he's also going to do a song or two.
Excellent.
We have James Potier, who's a 14-year-old boy, just coming right along. David Biker is he's going to be a little bit nervous, just a little bit. He hasn't done a group before, but he's good. Ed Schoenfeld, we know Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Henry, we know Pat. And Mike Truax,
who we just heard.
Mike comes up with songs none of us No. Mark Hurd is a very good guitarist and singer.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Van Kirk is going to play, and Kirk is a very generous musician. He'll sing at any time if he's in town. Debbie Johnson, and she and Mike often sing together, and they have wonderful harmonies. Terry Tibbett, we know her. Terry and Freddie Hoskinson, they're back in town, and they're going to do a set, along with the Sandy Warner, who's going to do just one song with Terry. And Paul Zahasky is going to bring his sound system, and he'll do several songs. And Paul is the ultimate musician, really. And then there's a boy I hope will show up. His name is Murphy. I know nothing about him except he has a guitar, and he likes the idea.
Sounds great.
And Steve Houlihan. He's not on my list, but he said now that he will play. He's Hooli, so you probably know him by that name.
Yeah, that sounds great. What a lineup.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. So how long have you guys been doing, and how often do you do these jamborees?
Well, this is the first time we've got one that we call a jamboree. We have a concert every winter month,
right,
starting in October, and we end when the folk festival comes on. So we've been doing it now for quite a few years, and we started at McPeters Hall, and then we got burned out of there. And then I switched over. After a few months, we moved over to Reservation Lutheran. The acoustics are great.
It's the first Saturday of every month. I don't think
the first Saturday of each month.
All right, and that's this Saturday. And all proceeds go to charity?
This month. They don't always. We do every periodically we do. Plus, at the end of the season, we always give them a bonus.
Okay. Is there a fixed price ticket?
Normally, we ask for a donation of $5. So in other words, it doesn't rack up very fast, but that's enough. Because our rent, Resurrection Lutheran is good.
Yeah. No, that sounds like quite a fair price for the lineup.
Yeah. You're a dollar a person.
Okay. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about that song.
Oh, I can't tell you much about that. I don't know who wrote it. Every now and then, my friends who know my style and my humor will send me a CD, and it's just got songs on it. And I go, you know, these are songs I thought you might like or want to learn. And this one came from my friend Terry O'Hara. He used to live here. He lives in Ketchikan now. And he sent me the CD with nothing written on it and said, here's some stuff you might like. And that was the first song on there. So I don't know who wrote it.
It was great.
Oh, thanks.
It was great. Yeah. All righty. Well, there we go. You heard it here. Gold Street Music's concert this month is going to be a jamboree. It's Saturday at Resurrection Lutheran Church right downtown, 7:30. It's got a great lineup, very diverse.
Yeah, we're
very, much so.
Very lucky to have Riley emceeing.
He's a great MC.
He knows what he's doing. And
he knows.
Because this is going to be a little chaotic maybe, but Riley will already handle it.
He's got to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
I think it will be a great night.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, and thank you so much for playing that song, Mike.
Certainly.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Cool. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It is Wednesday, January 4th. Right now it is 22 at the airport, 25 downtown, 17 in Mendenhall Valley, and 26 in Douglas. Not a duplicate number in any of that. Our next guest is Brenda Wright. She has been studying tree swallow. You've been awarded a grant. You were awarded a grant.
I was.
To study tree swallows in Southeast or all of Alaska?
Well, you know what? There's a really big project going on all over Alaska, but we're just doing a little local thing here right now.
A little local thing? Like how many people on this little local thing? I'm not sure how
volunteers,
little this...
Well, we're up to 40 nest boxes, and so we put them out, we take them in, we do data collection. So all that stuff has to happen with volunteers. So it takes more than a few. It's really nice to have a volunteer for each site. And we have 8 sites.
Yeah, that sounds great. And tonight you'll be talking about this experience at Wildlife Wednesday, 7 p.m. at the Valley Library, correct?
That's correct.
All right, let's start at the beginning. So you are a retired...
fish biologist.
Okay.
That, sometimes when you're waiting for the fish to arrive, you have binoculars and you just look around, see the birds and the trees and the flowers. And so I really got interested in birds. And luckily for me, now that I'm retired, I can spend more time with them.
And how has this experience been? And what kind of data were you collecting? And what were you looking for this tree swallows?
For the tree swallows, there was originally a project that started in 2005 with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It was all part of the Juneau Airport expansion, the environmental impact thing. And being a birder, you know, I wander around town and I see these old boxes and I go up to them to see if there's a nest in them. You know, if there'd been a nest, and a lot of them were falling apart, totally. So I thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice if we could put new boxes out? And so that's where the little grant came in. The Audubon Alaska office gives a small grant each year to the offers a small grant to the 5 chapters in Alaska. And I put in a little grant saying, can we have the money to repair and replace all these boxes? And so we got $450, and that's how the project started.
Sounds great. And if you want to know more, go tonight at 7 o'clock. But I have some questions for you, really ignorant questions that I'm actually going to ask on the air.
Okay.
So swallows, they make nests in boxes?
Yep. You know, they do. They actually do cavity nesting, which is why some of them like our nest boxes that we make for them. But a lot of them also make them out of mud. If you've ever been to the glacier any time in the summer and gone to the pavilion, you're going to see those barn swallow nests right up against the very rafters. They make their nests out of mud, and so we can't attract barn swallows to cavity boxes.
So let's say there weren't any boxes for tree swallows. What would they do?
They nest in cavities built by other birds. So around here, that's the sapsuckers and the woodpeckers.
They're squatters?
Well, you know, the sapsuckers, luckily for all the other birds that like to cavity nest, make a new nest each year.
Oh, so they move on.
They go to a new place.
Huh.
And maybe in the same general area, but they don't use the same nest over and over.
Okay. Back to the tree swallows. So you built nests. You put them out. She's going to tell you all about the experience. What if you didn't do that? What would happen?
You know, that's the main question. That's why my talk is called Where Have All the Swallows Gone? There's a really huge decrease in insects and insect-eating birds all over North America. And the people that started this project in the greater part of Alaska, especially in Fairbanks, were talking about, well, we have a really healthy population, and when all the other birds have, you know, maybe not have survived, there'll still be a huge population here to draw upon.
Because there's a lot of insects in Fairbanks. I've been there.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So no, that's why swallows are my favorite birds. You know, they like bugs, and I don't like them to bite me. So, yep. So with this unknown, we don't really know for sure how swallows are doing in Alaska. We have hearsay that says there were lots and lots more swallows here before, but before when? So we're trying to find out more about the populations in Alaska. Just like a lot of folks are doing across North America.
Sounds a lot more scientific than, we think. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is Wildlife Wednesday tonight, 7 o'clock, Valley Library, free. Mm-hmm. What else is coming up with Wildlife Wednesday?
Well, they have Wildlife Wednesday, first Wednesday of each month, October through March. So February 1st is Bob Armstrong, Chuck Caldwell, and Mary Wilson with Dredge Lake Beavers in Management. And March 1st is Laverne Beyer researching brown bears.
Oh, well, they both sound, everything sounds fascinating.
Great
from bears to beavers to bears. From birds to beavers to bears. Old bees for the next 3 months.
That's right.
That sounds great. Well, Brenda, thank you for coming by and telling us about tree swallows. If you want to find out more, 7 o'clock tonight. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Girls on the Run. Not the whole team, just one of the coordinators.
Thanks so much for some time on air.
Anytime.
This is Bird Note. That's the sound of a red crossbill. Crossbills travel in a small flock in search of seeds from the cones of pines, spruces, and firs. How they obtain those seeds involves a curious adaptation of their bills. First, cross your fingers, like one does for good luck. Now, just like your fingertips, the long tips of the crossbill's upper and lower bill don't meet, but instead cross over each other. To feed, the bird first detaches a cone from a conifer and holds that cone parallel to the branch with its feet. The bird then bites between the scales of the cone and pries them apart by opening its carefully crafted bill. Holding the scales apart, the bird then dislodges the seed with its tongue. Red crossbills search for cones on the tops of the trees, climbing around using their feet and bills, much like parrots. And strangely, they'll breed in winter, if the cone crop is good enough. Today's show brought to you by Forterra, saving the places that are keystones of a sustainable future in the Pacific Northwest. Writers for Bird Note include Francis Wood, Bob Sundstrom, Ellen Blackstone, Todd Peterson, Rick Wright, and Girl Scientist. I'm Michael Stein.
Study on your time, on your terms. Business, accounting, and management classes at the University of Alaska Southeast are completely web-based with no scheduled meeting times. Get the education you want without putting life on hold. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/SOM or call 796-6409 to speak with an advisor about spring 2017 registration.
It is 33 minutes past the hour on Wednesday, January 4th. I do want to say that there is a special weather statement issued that's going to start January 5th at 12 a.m., so that's tonight. Strong northerly outflow event is going to happen Thursday into the weekend. We're going to get some really, really cold weather and freezing fog. So just to let everybody know that, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. It's a live show. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer. And our next guest is Natalie Watson. She's here from Aware. She's here to talk about the Girls on the Run program and the Boys on the Run program as well. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's talk about these programs, Girls on the Run and Boys on the Run. I've heard about them. I know people have been involved with them. But what are they, and what's the purpose?
Great. Well, I'm going to talk about Boys Run first. So the full title is Boys Run Itu Platsin. That means strengthen your spirit. And it's a social and emotional empowerment program for third to fifth grade boys. And the vision is to instill healthy relationship and lifestyle skills in boys through running and cultural activities, empowering them to create a community of nonviolence and respect.
Wow, that sounds great.
It's very cool.
How long has that been going on?
It's fairly new. It's been going on for about a couple years, and that was developed locally in partnership with Sitka.
Yeah, that sounds great. And then the Girls on the Run, that's a national program, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's been going on since 2008 here. It's very successful. So we're going to be offering that in every elementary school in Juneau and both middle schools. Boys Run Itu Platsin will be at four of the elementary schools. So those are Harborview, Montessori Borealis, Gastineau, and Riverbend. So what we need are coaches.
When does the season start, before we get into the coaches?
Yeah, the season starts in mid-February.
And so you have a coach training coming up, maybe?
We do indeed, yeah. So the Girls on the Run coach training is Saturday, January 28th. And the Boys Runny 2 o'clock scene coach training is Saturday, February 4th.
Okay, so let's say somebody's listening and they were like, maybe I could be a coach. What kind of commitment is it?
Well, you can coach for one or two times a week, and the season is 10 weeks. Each lesson is 90 minutes. And it's not a traditional coaching role. It's more of a mentorship, so you don't have to be a runner. You just have to believe in empowering kids.
And there are lesson plans. So basically, yeah, so you as a coordinator would give the coaches all the tools that they need and the support.
Yeah, so they have a curriculum and they have a coach box and all the materials that they need.
Sounds great.
And a team of coaches, so that nobody's alone. You know, we have a team of two or three coaches.
Well, I would think that would be the case. So how many coaches do you need?
Wow, we need quite a few. The more the better, actually, because we need substitute coaches as well. So I'm not going to put a limit on how many coaches we need.
Okay. And the training, one more time, was Saturday the 28th. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yep. And then February 4th for the Boys Run program.
And then the program starts mid-February.
Yeah.
And so the commitment is once or twice a week for how many
weeks? 10 weeks.
For 10 weeks?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And then we end the season with a celebratory 5K fun run on May 6th. So both the girls and then the boys are going to, everyone's going to do the 5K together. It's really fun.
That's great. And these all take place at the schools, the after hour?
The program.
Yeah.
Yeah, they take place after school, so 2:30 to 4 normally. And if people want to get involved, they can call me at 586-4902 or email me at nataliew@awareak.org.
Okay, all right. And in your experience, how long have you been in this position?
Since last summer.
Uh-huh.
So I got to coach both the Boys Run and a Girls on the Run team.
Uh-huh.
And it was really wonderful bonding with the kids.
That sounds great. So for you, now that you're the coordinator, what do you think are some of the most important things about the program?
Well, it's really about giving these kids kind of self-confidence to follow their own gut and to be able to withstand peer pressure and bullying. Just follow what they know is right.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, if you want any more information, you could find out probably at the Aware website, along with giving Natalie a call one more
time. That's right. Yeah, I'm at 586-4902 or nataliew@awareak.org.
That sounds great. Thank you for what you do for our community and for everybody at Aware and what they do. So
Thank
we
you.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
PTOO is about 5 months out from having the honor of hosting David Sedaris in Juneau, and less than 200 tickets remain. If you're hoping to join us on May 14th, we encourage you to go to ktoo.org or the Jack to purchase your seats. Again, that's David Sedaris in Juneau this May 14th, brought to you by KTOO with sponsorship support from COPA.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon, KTOO, at KTOO, live coming from you from the studios in downtown Juno. Our next guest is Jeffra Clow, and she is up the mountain, and she's here to tell us, well, here to chat with us, about what's going on up at Eagle Crest. Hey, Jeffra, how's it going up there?
Hey, good afternoon, Joan. Oh, it's just been an amazing day up on the mountain. The weather's been awesome. We go in and out of clouds, and I looked outside at one point this afternoon and went some clouds on the mountain, and I looked up and there was blue sky just right above me. So it's just been an awesome day on the mountain today, and everybody's had a great day. We're looking forward to another one tomorrow.
Yeah, so you're open all week, right?
We are. We're open daily through Monday, January 9th.
We wish.
Yep. No, we don't want to go that far. But, yep, we're open daily through Monday, January 9th. And the snow bus is operating every day. It'll stop operating daily on Sunday, January 8th. And, yep, it's been a great holiday season. We're just finishing up the last of our Snow Sports School holiday camps and looking forward to programs starting on this weekend.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions. So the snow bus, where do they pick up and how does that run and how does that work?
Well, the snow bus picks up a variety of places around town. It starts out in the valley and then picks up different spots all through downtown and even goes into Douglas. We work with First Students, so it is a First Student bus. But you can pick that up, and the schedule and the stopping points are found on our website at skijuno.com. It's $5 one way or $10 round trip, or you can buy a bus season bus pass for just $79. So that's a great way to get up the mountain. It, usually arrives up on the mountain about by around 9 o'clock, 9:05 in the morning, and then it departs here at 3:30 and gets back into town, gets everyone home by about 4:30 or 4:45.
You can't beat that, being up and down from a mountain that quick. That sounds great.
Yeah, no, that's great.
I know that you've had your holiday sports, your holiday camps and so on and so forth, but typically your stuff is kicked off that first week in January. What kind of classes do you have for people? I mean, I know it's all different levels, but are you kicking off your typical whole ski school thing this weekend?
Yep, we've got a wide variety of programs for youth and adults that kick off this weekend. And we also, January is also Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month. And one of our signature events of Learn to Ski and Snowboard Month is we're participating in a nationwide effort to break the Guinness World Book of Records for the largest simultaneous ski and snowboard lesson.
I heard about this. So how does that work?
So we're doing that on Friday, January 6th, and it'll start at 9 a.m. And we're looking for first-time skiers and first-time snowboarders to help us break this record. And we still have some spots open, so we're hoping out there in your listening land there's somebody that's just eager to learn how to ski or snowboard. It's just $10, and that $10 will get you a two-hour lesson, a lift ticket, and equipment rental, and also a chance to make a historic event and break the World's Guinness Book of Records for the largest ski or snowboard event.
And there's
about 80 to 90 ski areas across the country and Canada that are participating in this. So it's a big, huge nationwide effort. And we participated in this last year, and we brought 87 new skiers and snowboarders up on the mountain with us, and we're hoping to equal that, if not pass that, this year. So,
wow, what time is the lesson here?
Yeah, if you're out there listening and you haven't signed up yet, give us a call at 790-2000, extension 211. We'll get you signed up on the books, and this is the year to learn how to ski and snowboard, and what a great opportunity to do it on Friday.
Yeah, that sounds great. And what time is it on Friday?
It starts at 9 o'clock on Friday. So we do need to have everybody registered by about noon tomorrow, which is Thursday. So we are asking that if you do want to go ahead and give us a call and get yourself on the books for that, that would be just great.
$10 for a lesson, a lift ticket, and skis. That's crazy.
Yes. So It's a great opportunity. It's very discounted, and we're just looking for people to help us go ahead and break that record.
Okay. And now, you know, while we have all these little microclimates throughout Juneau, can you tell us, like, I was up there this morning, but I'd like to hear from you. Can you tell us about what it's looking like on the mountain? It's been like heaven up there for these past couple of days.
Yes, we're definitely a winter wonderland. We've got great snow conditions. The mountain is 100% open, including all of our lower Nordic trails. So if you're interested also in skate or classic skiing, those trails are skiing very, very well. And so we have conditions that we've not had for a couple of years. So this is great. We started off the winter really very well, and we're looking forward to a long season.
Cool. And then these ski lessons that kick off this weekend, can we just kind of highlight a bunch of them? So I think you do Nordic and skate and beginners.
Yep,
and
yep,
then
we sure do. So one of the big classes that starts this weekend that still has room in it is the new class this year. It's called our Skate Technique and Fitness class. It's on Saturday mornings from 10 to 12, and it's a four-week program that works for people who already really know how to skate but want to improve their skills and also want to work on the fitness aspect of skate skiing. So that you can sign up for that. We still have room in our Wee Ski programs, which is our ski programs for ages 3 to 6, and our Little Rippers programs, which are snowboard programs for ages 4 to 6. So we offer those. We have openings in those on Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And then we also have programs for the older kids. Our Mountain Explorers group, Powder Pilots group all starts this weekend. And then we have a women's program that we call Women's Reach the Peak, and it's a women's specific program on Sunday afternoons. And this is for women who want to improve their skills, challenge themselves into new terrain, and it's a four-week program, and that's a great opportunity for women to get out and ski with each other and have a great time.
Sounds great. And the Powder Pilots, I've never heard that. I've heard about all the others, but what's Powder Pilots?
So Powder Pilots is a program for 5 to 7-year-olds who already know how to ski. So they're skiing on our porcupine chair, able to make turns and stop, and they're looking to improve their skills, but kind of still stay within that 5 to 7 age group. So our groups are smaller. They work on their improving skills, kind of start challenging themselves in new terrain. We also work at starting to introduce terrain park features to them, introduce racing to them, and just kind of big mountain skiing to them as well. So for that age group, that's a great way to start exploring more of the mountain and all of the things that we have up here at the mountain for them to do.
Sounds great. So if you're just joining us, we're chatting with Jeffra Klaus. She's up at the mountain right now, and we are talking about Eagle Crest. And so for people who are listening and maybe have never skied, who are just, you know, kind of like, oh, maybe this year. The conditions are amazing right now. But how much is just like a lift ticket or a half-day ticket? You have different, you know, for the people who are not season holders.
Right, we do. Well, if you've never skied before, we always recommend to take a lesson. And just a daily walk-up lesson for learning how to ski or snowboard is $54, and that includes the lesson, the lift ticket, and the rental. Of course, as we discussed early, if you want to do that on Friday, January 6th, and be part of the world's largest lesson, it's only $10. But just an example, an all-day lift ticket on weekends and holidays is $51, and a rental is $35. So if you've never skied or snowboarded before, we recommend taking the lesson package. You get that two-hour lesson so you can get really enjoy the sport, get it under the belt, and it's actually your least expensive option. You can also do 3 days of lessons, lift ticket, and rental for just $119. So that's a great way to get introduced to the sport, see if you like the sport, and then if you do like the sport, you can get a very discounted price on a season pass for the rest of the season. So, and all of those options are available on our website at skijuneau.com.
Right. I wanted to talk about that, too, because you also have, like, a weather report and all different types of activities.
Yep. We do our snow conditions report. We have our events calendar, our lesson programs that we do, Nordic programs, all the information that we have, and the homepage has photos that change out all the time with just everything that's going on up at the mountain. And I think some people may think that learning how to ski or snowboard is just a little too intimidating, and it's very tough. Skiing and learning how to ski and snowboard is a great family activity that the whole family can participate in together, and it's very individualized. So you can all have a shared experience, but by skiing individually, skiing as fast as you want or progressing as fast as you want or slow as you want on your skill level. And I have an example today. We had just a great woman that came up and skied with us this afternoon or this morning. She's 70 year old and decided that today was the day to learn how to ski, and she did awesome.
So, that's great.
Yeah, I think you're never too old to learn how to ski, and you know, I think it's a great way to explore outside in the wintertime and get exercise and just really enjoy the outdoor experience.
Right. And the weather's been great up there. It hasn't even been windy. It's just
No. It's been great. We're definitely wintertime temperatures, which is very nice. I think today we're in the mid-20s, and I think we're looking at that a little bit drop in the temperatures over the weekend, but you dress in lots of layers. And the nice thing about skiing and snowboarding is you're working and exercising, and that is burning calories and keeping you warm.
Yeah, sounds great. And then one last question before I let you go. So the Porcupine Lodge, the building, I think it's called the Porcupine Lodge, was built a couple of years ago. Can you tell us what's housed in there for people who haven't been up there?
Yep, the Porcupine Lodge. This is our second season of operation for the Porcupine Lodge. On the main floor, the first floor of the Porcupine Lodge, you'll find lift tickets, our snow sports school sales. We have a full-service repair shop and a retail shop that has, the retail shop has just an amazing selection of logo items, and if you've forgotten hats or goggles or gloves, just all sorts of different items that you will need. On the second floor of the Porcupine Lodge, we have the rental shop. So if you need rentals, you actually pay for them downstairs and then come upstairs. So most of the second floor is the rental shop. We also have a big lobby that you can people mill around with and kind of watch everybody out on the hill or just socialize. We have a kids program area upstairs. We have a training room, and then we also have our adaptive program area as well as a couple offices. So it's a great building. It's great for our renters. They're able to go walk right outside the second floor and go directly to the slope. So it makes it very easy for everybody to get on their skis or on their snowboard and get off up the mountain.
Sounds great. All right. Well, thanks, Jeffra, for taking time out as you close out your day up there to tell us what's going on. And you heard it here. It's the world's largest ski lesson this Friday,
yes.
$10 to learn how to ski at 9 o'clock up at Eagle Crest. So thanks for all that you do up there. Hope you guys have a great weekend. And okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. Thanks, Jeffra.
Right. Thank you, Joan. Bye now.
It is 6 minutes to the hour on Wednesday, January 4th. Thanks for joining Jeff Brown, the producer and engineer of the show, and myself, Joan Partis, who usually sits in on Thursday, but it's Wednesday this week for our show today. So we have a special weather statement here in Juneau. We're having a strong northerly outflow event Thursday into the weekend, which means cold weather and maybe freezing fog. Tonight, we're looking at that freezing fog, mid-20s, low around 15 in the valley, and then tomorrow mostly cloudy with flurries, high in the mid-20s, same for tomorrow night, and then Friday we're looking at cloudy, high in the mid-20s with winds to 40 miles an hour downtown in the valley, and then Friday night more of the same. Right now it's 22 at the airport, 25 downtown, 17 in the valley, and 26 in Douglas. And then tomorrow, tune in Thursday, We're talking to UAS, the Juno Douglas City Museum, the Garden Club Seed Exchange, and, of course, Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.